door, slam shut, and it's on.
That's pretty darn creepy.
Listen, this is gonna sound totally crazy, and I know that, but I'm having this feeling lately that maybe whatever happened to us when we were little, I think it's starting again.
I don't want to talk about this, Christy.
I just remember being scared all the time.
Whatever it was, it thrived on fear. The more we paid attention to it, the worse it got. You need to leave this alone.
Welcome to Now Playing's Paranormal Activity Retrospective Series.
You promised me you weren't going to mess with that stuff.
You cannot run from this. It will follow you.
Hosted by Arnie.
They just about think he's the coolest guy ever.
Jacob.
I know that elders like Jacob can feel kind of intense, but as long as you stick with me, you'll be fine.
And Stuart.
There are these malevolent evil spirits that only exist to cause pain and commit evil for their own amusement.
This podcast will contain harsh language, movie spoilers, and may try to scare you with loud, sudden banging.
And you're not in control. It is in control. And if you think you're in control, then you're being an idiot.
Listener discretion is advised.
You know, we can't just let this affect us that much. If we do that, the terrorists win.
Today we're discussing Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones, starring Andrew Jacobs, Jorge Diaz, Gabriella Walsh, Jessica Tyler Brown, directed by Christopher Landon. This is the Now Playing co-host that only looks illegal, Arnie.
And Stuart.
This is Jacob, and I'm blazing one for the podcast. Frankly, it's the only way I'm getting through the rest of these paranormal. There's like two more after this. I gotta be blazing.
You're lucky you live in California where it's legal.
Yeah, I just go down the corner shop and I can be blazing.
Well, I think Paramount was a little blazing about this one. This is the first Paranormal Activity to miss the October window. They have been cranking them out every year. October, Halloween, we own this. And they claim they were still filming in July, and that meant that post-production was impossible to get it together in October. But all the other movies shot that way, so...
Yeah, this one actually has visual effects, though.
Yeah.
That takes time to do.
This is the most expensive of one. I think it came close to a $10 million budget.
Yeah, it feels like it.
Yeah.
And this is the lowest earner one to this point as well. It's only made, in America anyway, $32 million, which is about half of what the fourth one did and $100 million less than what the original did.
Well, there's a reason the next one's the last one. Kind of like Saw, when things started to go south, they're like, all right, you've done well, we'll give you a send-off. I think that's why next time is theoretically the last film, although we all know we're doing this series because they ended up coming back.
Yeah, just like Saw, they both came back in 2021.
Yeah, they were trying to reboot. I don't know. The word on this one, I remember very little about this coming out. Keep in mind, only saw the first one when all of these were coming out. But my understanding was that this was less a sequel and more like a sidequel, that they were going to do something else. They were is a spinoff and not a direct continuation. Something that is actually kind of proven wrong by watching the movie.
Yeah, but they still don't know what they want to do with that little baby, right? Because like we keep thinking we're going to get that story, but nope, we're going to go to Oxnard instead.
Oxnard, home of Alf. Stuart, you took me to Oxnard.
Mm-hmm. It's less exciting than Alf, I'll tell you that.
But I remember this movie's coming out. They always get me, both this and The Conjuring. I remember seeing the trailer for this, and it's some guy riding down the stairs in a laundry basket. I'm like, oh boy, another Jackass movie. And then it turned out to be Paranormal Activity.
There's a lot of similarity, quite frankly. I mean, I do think that both of them are thinking about punking people in shocks and the overriding story. Maybe not a total concern. But I will say, the guy that has been writing the scripts for 2, 3, and 4 is now taking the reins of director. Christopher Landon is now not only behind this script, he's been given full creative control and directing this piece.
Yeah, director who we've talked about one of his films before.
You guys did the Happy Death Day series. He directed both of those, wrote one of them.
Oh, he did both. Okay.
Yeah, and Freaky, the follow-up to that.
Which is good. I know Arnie doesn't like it, but maybe someday we'll do it. It feels like it's in that Happy Death Day universe.
They keep talking about a crossover, and so if they do Freaky meets Happy Death Day, then we'll have our day where I explain why Freaky is no good.
And I'll say why it's good.
I liked it, yeah. I mean, it didn't move my world. I wouldn't scream.
No, but it's entertaining.
But yeah, it felt like a young adult bent campy horror comedy. And maybe that's what they're trying to go for here. It's clearly the characters of the last movie and now this one, young adults, graduating high school students. That seems to be the audience that they're sticking with. And maybe a wise choice. Maybe that's who's going to turn up for a part five of a horror series.
I also wonder if they weren't looking at demographics of who was going to the Paranormal Activity films and maybe noticed a large Hispanic base, because that's what happened with Leprechaun in the Hood, you know, is they started looking at what areas, what people are renting the Leprechaun films, predominantly African-American. Okay, let's make Leprechaun go to the Hood. I have to think that the mixture of Christian spiritualism with demons and possession and things, just on the surface, it seems like they really could have a strong Hispanic base.
I mean, I would put a finer point on that. Catholics, yes. There's a big Latin Catholic population and demon possession, all of that. The Exorcist, that plays to the Catholic audience quite well.
Yeah, what tells me they're going for a specific audience is they do set it in Oxnard. They're not going to say in San Diego. Oxnard is a heavily Latino part of Southern California, like a lot of illegal immigration with the strawberry picking. But it's just like, I felt like they nailed it pretty good, like with the vibe of what Oxnard's really like. And it did feel like, yeah, they had a demographic in mind.
Did they actually film in Oxnard? I can't think why they wouldn't have.
I believe so. It looked like it.
Yeah, I believe they're there. I mean, yeah. Not much to Oxnard, in my opinion.
There's a giant Santa Claus on the side of the freeway you can look at in Oxnard.
I feel like we've had four movies now of white suburbia, California. Mixing it up ethnically is probably a good idea. We need freshness. I definitely feel after that Paranormal 4, we're not going anywhere with the story. I needed something. Give me a drop of something new, because the old found footage tricks, I don't know. You might even be tempted not to do a found footage. If you were doing a true spinoff, you might take the risk of just shooting it like a normal horror movie and have people look at cameras occasionally.
I think you say that every movie we cover is, you know, they might not have done found footage from part two on. You're bringing up movies that don't do found footage. I think they're pretty entrenched.
But nobody's done this.
I'll say it about this one, though. It feels like it's got one foot in each camp of found footage and traditional filmmaking. Like, this could almost, like, if you think of some recent high school graduates and give them an iPhone, this is what you make a legitimate film. And, like, I think this is what would be the end result. It does feel like they're attempting to do it somewhat different.
Now, which version did you guys see? The unrated?
Unrated.
That's an hour and 40 minutes?
Sadly, I watched the version that was, what, 17 minutes longer?
17 more?
And I wish that the movie I watched was 17 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
So neither of you watched the theatrical cut?
No.
Okay. I saw both just to try and parse out what's different. And the way, listeners, if you want to know which one you might have seen, if they do a black magic ritual, spray painting, a mirror black, go into a church, you're seeing the longer cut.
Oh, so the ritual that doesn't matter at all? Okay.
Yeah, it's not in the shorter one.
I see why it was cut.
I thought that ritual is what brought the demon.
No, we'll talk about what brought the demon, but no, we're told what brings the demon. It is not a mirror.
And the mirror set up the ending. If you don't have the mirror, you'd be really confused by the end.
I was confused by the ending no matter what, so.
All right, well, let's clear up some confusion then. Arnie, give him the plot, and we'll find out what happens to the marked ones.
18-year-old Jesse just graduated from high school. He's looking forward to a summer of clowning and playing with the camcorder he bought with his graduation money. He stops playing around and starts playing Scooby-Doo when his high school valedictorian Oscar is seen running from an apartment in Jesse's building. The apartment is owned by Anna Sanchez, who's rumored to be a witch. Jesse and his friends Hector and Marisol start to use the cameras to spy on Anna, and they catch her performing a black magic ritual with a naked young woman. Soon after, Anna is found dead. The three youths take a book of spells from Anna's apartment and perform one that will, quote, open doorways to unholy places. but I guess that's only in the extended cut.
Only in the director's cut. Yep.
After the spell, strange things start happening in Jesse's apartment. They start talking to an invisible demon who communicates through a Mattel Simon game.
Great. Love it.
And Jesse has super strength and can levitate, though there's a strange bite mark on his arm. Jesse confronts Oscar, who has the same bite mark and isn't looking well. Oscar kills himself before the demon inside him takes over. Jesse has a vision of little girl Christy and Katie from part 3, and then he becomes withdrawn and mean. Investigating this, Hector and Marisol end up meeting Allie Ray, the teenager who survived part 2. Stuart's been saying she might come back. Here she does.
I didn't think it'd be this one, but here she is.
Allie tells the teens Jesse's been marked by a coven called the Midwives, who are creating an army of demon-possessed super beings. Okay.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty badass black metal concept album that I would buy.
Mm-hmm.
The Midwives, it's probably already a band, but someone take that name. It's awesome.
Jesse attacks Hector, but strangers abduct Jesse. Hector, Marisol, and a couple of others go to where Jesse was taken, and it turns out to be the house owned by Christy and Katie's grandmother, Lois, who we met in part 3. Marisol is killed, and Hector flees through a door that takes him back in time. He's now in the house shared by Katie and Mika, and Hector watches as Katie murders Mika, which happened in the very first film. Then Jesse appears and kills Hector as credits roll.
It's all coming together. They're tying it up. You know what? You got to appreciate the fact that the screenwriter is finally like, look, all this breadcrumbs that I left behind, we're going to actually make some bread. Like, no more crumbs. We're going to try to tell you what's going on. I feel like this, for the first time, at least since the third one, we're getting the idea of what's happening in all of this found footage.
And yet, I don't know if the writer has an idea. Like, yes, these are breadcrumbs mashed together into maybe a little breadstick.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't go so far to say as a piece of bread.
Biscotti.
Yeah.
I just want to know how they got all these actors back. I mean, this is like the Avengers of the Paranormal Activity series.
You say actors like they have other jobs that they could be at.
Now, as we start, it makes sense that people would be taping. It's a high school graduation. If there's ever a time that people whip out cameras, that's going to be it. I think there's a little bit of postmodern fun here. We have the valedictorian saying we're going in new directions, new beginnings, next chapters, signaling that this installment is not going to be like the previous four.
Yeah, but he also says a time of transformation, change, which he is undergoing, and we don't know it yet. He is transforming.
But he's not our focal character. He is just, yes, the omen. Dare I use that word when talking about a horror series, but he is the harbinger of what's going to happen to Jesse, who is our main character, and not at the top of his class, but graduating. And again, this is a good way to introduce a supporting cast, going around at a party, having him socialize, creating that naturalistic feeling that this is just a high school kid that likes to have fun and party and dance and gamble.
Yeah, it feels natural until they have to start talking about weird-ass Anna, this neighbor that just got newspaper over the windows and never comes out. Like, that part does feel forced in there. Like, we got to get that exposition in.
Yeah. Well, we're setting up the whole apartment complex.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of the start of Cloverfield when this starts. You know, you're starting with a party and it's people graduating and having a good time and the camera's being handed off between people. And we're getting introduced to a whole lot of people, most of whom won't matter, but a couple of whom will.
Yeah. And, you know, some people will have a larger presence in the longer cut, or when you look at some of the deleted scenes. I do think they shot a lot without knowing what would be in the final cut. But I would say there's probably 6 people we're meeting here in this party that have some tie to what happens in the end.
My favorite character, though, is Jesse's grandmother. She is, like, having a blast at this party. She's booty dancing and bumping and just having a good time. I love that grandma in this movie. Every time she's on screen, I'm smiling.
Mm-hmm. They cut her chick weight joke from the extended cut. If you watch the theatrical, there's a lot more of Irma in the longer cut, just because I think people did enjoy her presence. She's fun and she's important because, of course, grandma's no superstition. She's going to be the one to sort of try and protect her grandson once he starts dabbling in black magic.
And we kind of replay from part two, where we saw Mika got interested in camcorders because his sister-in-law's husband had one. And here we see Jesse gets interested in cameras because somebody's filming him and he's like, oh, that looks fun. And so he goes to a pawn shop and gets a high-def camera for $200 in 2012. That is a bargain.
Yeah, I was trying to understand the camera situation here, because he's got one that he brings to the pawn shop. I guess that's, what, he's borrowing Hector's or something?
It's his dad's.
Okay, that was his dad's. And then this pawn shop, look, I don't go to the pawn shop a whole lot, but this pawn shop owner, yeah, he's coming down on this camera awfully fast. He's willing to throw in a free GoPro as well. I'm like, oh, okay, that's going to be their gimmick for this one, is a GoPro. Like, mount that on someone's head as they run around from the ghost.
They don't use the GoPro near enough in this film, I'm going to say. GoPros have a very distinct look.
That fisheye thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm, and everything is in sharp focus. It could have really brought a new visual flavor to a Paranormal Activity film, but I think they only use it like once or twice.
And just to make it simple, I think it's probably the wise decision. The theatrical cut cuts out all of this. You don't know where the camera comes. You assume that the camera that's going around at the graduation party is the camera that he's bringing to see Hector when Hector is at his job sign flipping at the tire store.
And this is a moment that feels a little too real. There's some people across the street and they're like, why are you filming us? And it leads to a chase scene.
I thought like they stole the camera and they're going to have to use the GoPro for the rest of the film, but I guess they just chased them around.
Well, I think the idea is that this is a semi-dangerous neighborhood. Now, there's a lot of fun going on. We have kids that are not involved in crime, but all around them, if you point the camera at the wrong person, you might be catching illicit activity. And yeah, these people look like they're going to hurt you. I think they might even be, one of them might be someone that comes for their backpack later. But no one's doing anything more dangerous than, yes, Crazy Anna. The thing that they've tipped us off early is that below Jesse's apartment is a bruja, a witch. And she's a witch because she yells at people. She is somehow, and I don't know that we ever exactly find out how, tied to Oscar, the valedictorian. Maybe she caused him to be so smart and to get good grades. There's definitely going to be an occult altar that we're going to see later, but I'm not exactly sure why Oscar is a marked one.
We've never seen somebody become demonically possessed and then have an ultimate desire to read and learn. So I'm got to think that he got involved in some other way, but he was valedictorian on his own. I think when we see him running from Anna's, might be the first time he got involved there. But yes, I wish I knew more about it. Hell, the way this series goes, maybe part six is going to be all about Oscar.
Look, he doesn't start becoming demonic till now because, as we'll be told later from Allie, 666, you add those up, 18 years old.
Is he just now 18?
Yeah, if he's graduating high school, maybe it takes a few months once you hit your 18th birthday. I don't know. I'm just cracking up at that 666 equals 18 thing.
Oh, I know. Yes. You're jumping ahead to something that, I mean, I'm just going to go in order of this movie. But yes, a ridiculous, ridiculous suggestion. So why are they filming?
I never know why they're filming most of the stuff here.
I guess we see them doing a jackass stunt. Hector, his best friend, also lives in the apartment complex, gets talked into getting in a laundry basket and going down the stairwell like it's a bobsled. They end up deciding that because there's so much screaming from Anna's apartment, they should drop the camera down through the air vent. And we get a moment where we're peeking through the grate and seeing a black magic ritual.
Was this in both cuts? Because nobody needed to see this.
Yeah, it was in both cuts.
Okay, I guess this is R-rated. They just hold that nudity for a while, which I would think, even if it's R-rated, they are going for a PG-13 crowd. So I'm surprised it went on this long in the theatrical.
I'm just surprised they showed Anna naked.
Was that Anna?
Yeah.
Was she the old one or was she the young one just standing there?
She was the old one.
Okay.
The young one is standing so still, I swear to God, I thought it was a mannequin.
That's what I thought too. Yeah, she never moves.
Eventually, her face changes expression, but her face is just in the same blank expression, and her body is in such a neutral pose. And yeah, I mean, mannequins have definition under their clothes in order to wear the clothes correctly. I thought she was painting that symbol on a mannequin for like a good minute or two.
Yeah, once Anna walks in and paints that symbol, I'm like, okay, this is a woman that's either about to get pregnant or just freshly pregnant.
Right, yes. I mean, you can infer, the movie will never tell, but you can infer black magic ritual, this is a witch, and yes, she's putting something in her belly, and I don't know, mannequin challenges were big at this time, right? Like, all the kids were doing that, and that was 2014.
Was planking big in when this film came out?
Mm-hmm, I feel like it.
Was I the only one who got confused, though, between Anna here and Martine, the Hispanic nanny from part two? Now, I'm not being racist. I'm Hispanic. But I just remembered that we had a Hispanic nanny in part two that was trying to exorcise the ghosts. And I thought there'd be some kind of connection here with that nanny because the nanny lived.
Never occurred to me. I can honestly say I wasn't ever thinking about part two at all until Allie came back in.
No.
I had to go look up the name because I couldn't remember the name of the nanny from part two, but it is not Anna. So this is not the tie-in.
No, this woman looks very disturbed. We have one moment where they bait a small child to go knock on this woman's door and she's actually standing there watching. And we get one moment of her in the sunlight clothed and she definitely looks disturbed, like mentally disturbed. And you know, all neighborhoods have this kind of personality, right? There's always the crazy lady. That's something to exploit in a horror movie. This kind of makes sense as a setup. I'm not entirely sure why these guys are going to be filming her specifically, but a lot of it is, I think, opportunity. They're on 4th of July going to be lighting fireworks right by her window, and they're going to catch on camera Oscar jumping out and running away. I thought this was a really effective jump scare, actually.
Yeah, no, I was watching this again with my girls, and they jumped at this. Even my wife jumped at this moment. Like, yeah, it did work for 3/4 of the crowd watching it in my home.
Not you.
No.
What's funny is I actually didn't jump because I was waiting for that firecracker to go off and because the wick didn't go and everything. And so I'm so steeled for the firecracker to go off that when Oscar came running through, I was like, whoa, what was that? I just kept waiting for the bang.
That's why this is masterful, as the calculation is we're focused on the thing on the ground and then boom behind them. Then he runs past and then the firework goes off. I thought it was really well done. I was really taken by this as a, again, jump scares may be cheap, but they're not easy to pull off.
I mean, but this series got to live and die by those, and they haven't given me a whole lot of them at least. So yeah, I appreciate this attempt here. And we're told Oscar's running because he's killed Anna.
Shot her, even.
Yeah, which I did not buy because when we see the police show up, they bring out a body bag. We never see Anna's body. So I'm like, oh, it's going to be someone else he killed in there. And I thought that's where this was going, that Anna was still going to be this witch lurking around that we thought was dead for the next hour.
Yeah, what we can kind of infer is that I guess Oscar was a firstborn son, if I'm taking all the mythology together.
Even though he has an older brother, but that's because he's adopted.
And then Anna was like grooming him for the midwives cult. And so once he started demoning out, he killed Anna, but yet it doesn't stop the demonic progression inside of him.
Yeah, I'm going to hold back on motivations because I don't think the series has ever told me exactly why the demon's doing what it's doing. Never. Never understood that.
Yeah, at one point, Oscar is going to tell us you got to kill yourself before you hurt someone. And I don't know why he has that moment of clarity then. They're not going to tell us. But yeah, that's what we're told, that something's going to take you over and make you do awful things.
We've seen Exorcist movies. We've seen these previous movies. We know that at some point somebody gets a fang face and everyone else is up Schitt's Creek at that point. So again, a part five of any series, we might be thinking, what can they do that makes it feel fresh? I'm going to vote that I actually find this world compelling. I actually find the main characters, the environment, this tack of bringing it in. We'll eventually get back to Katie and all of that. But I think that this is a healthy place to start after four.
Yeah, I enjoy being with new people because it makes it less predictable. Like before, I just felt like, okay, night one, we're going to hear one knock. Night three, we're going to see a door slightly move. Like now, I don't know. We're not even getting those night markers anymore. Then that's why I say this feels more like a traditional film. We almost have like a three-act structure going on here and escalation and all those kind of things.
Let me third what you two have said. This feels more like a movie down to the point of we never will understand why they're filming everything. This almost could be third-person camera stuff, but it does feel more professional. It looks better. I like the cast so far. And yeah, unfortunately, it's just not digging too much into the scares early on. We did have Oscar coming out, and we have the mythology being built up. But like all the Paranormal Activities before it, it's going to take a while before our main characters start interacting with the demons.
Yeah. And again, you would want that to be. If you were trying to follow a formula, you would want there to be a slow build. I appreciate that it's not just, hey, look, did that door close an inch? Like that they can't do anymore. That is a dead end. Part four told you that if you build a whole movie around that kind of paranormal activity, it dies on the vine. Here, we're going to have a little bit more dramatic. They're going to break into Anna's place, and we're going to see some connections. I'm not going to say it ties things together, but we're going to see Katie and Christie's old VHS tapes that got stolen.
Yeah, I saw that. But my question is, why is that fridge like chained up?
Yeah, I don't know. What could possibly be in there?
Was it a portal to the past?
But yeah, we do see a whole closet of videotapes. It does make you think, like, is it the midwives that are putting these compilations of people's home videos together as they overtake them?
I don't know. Yeah. And why VHS?
So many VHS. Yeah.
They slowed down in the era of DVD. They didn't have a burner.
This is also where we meet Arturo. We saw him briefly. He is the opposite of Oscar. He's Oscar's older half-brother, I guess. And he runs with an 805 gang and is very threatening and is telling them in the dark that his brother didn't do it and that he's trying to snoop around to prove that someone else is responsible for Anna's death. Again, we don't even know if Anna is dead. So I think that's a fair assumption that open-ended, they've left this wide open for however they want to interpret it next time. If they want to pick up the strand or not, I don't know who shot Anna or if she's dead.
I'm taking them on their face value. We never see Anna again.
I mean, I didn't even hear a gunshot, so I don't know. There are deleted scenes, too, of people coming in and out and taking things. So it feels like if she was assassinated, it was by the other witches. It was condoned.
That changes things a little, but there was somebody taken out of there in a body bag.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Somebody, but what body?
And I thought we were going to get a lot of hints. They find a journal with all the incantations spelled out, how to do them. So I thought, oh, we're going to get like the whole story from this journal. Apparently, we just get a cutscene.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys freeze framed, but inside all of that pentagrams and pictures, there is a picture of Mika and Katie in there as well. So already they're building that tie that whatever happened to Katie and Christie is known to Anna. She was involved. That tie will become even more tightly bound as we get to the hatch in the basement.
I did not freeze frame. I didn't catch Christie and Katie in there. I caught the videotape, but I didn't catch them in the book.
Yeah, so yeah, the biggest difference, I feel like the longest scene that has been removed, that 16 minutes of excise footage from theatrical, what are you missing? I don't know. I feel like you kind of would want this scene, right? Maybe it doesn't have too much to do with the demon coming because I feel like Anna already told Jesse.
You get marked at birth.
Yeah. You don't know what's coming to you. And we know that she's been following him since childhood. So that they look into this journal and do this black mirror spell.
Here's my problem with the spell. One, they're doing it in a church, which feels like if you come from a very Catholic culture, I don't think you'd be doing this kind of thing in a church. But that said, my biggest problem is they go back to those old scares where we're just going to make a thump and then nothing happens. Like, you have a mirror that's spray painted black. That's really cool looking. It's in the sign of the midwife. I was looking like, is there a shimmer of light coming out of it as they do this spell? Nothing cool happens with the mirror. That's the problem. That's why you cut this.
It looked so good spray painted black that I thought it might turn into some kind of liquid pool.
Yes.
They say it's going to become a portal. I thought somebody might go into the mirror.
I think they do at the end.
I think they do too, but it never has the cool visual effect that I'm expecting coming in here.
It feels like an idea that got shortened to the point of being unessential. Keep in mind, think about that third movie. All of those cool scenes that got deleted or were in the trailers.
Yeah, all the reasons I recommended it were cut.
Right, yeah, I get the sense, not unlike Jackass, they devise these pranks and then they're like, oh, but does it actually fit into what we're trying to imply happened? And if it really doesn't, they have to cut it.
I'm glad I saw the extended cut with this because they talk about time travel and things, because the ending would have probably pissed me off without this scene.
Yeah, that really perked my ear when they start talking about time travel, because they had that whole conversation in part three about it felt like they're doing a Back to the Future joke, and now they're talking about time travel, but then they're like, oh no, it means a portal to another dimension. I'm like, oh, well, that's not time travel. That's just a dimension portal to hell or something. They give so many explanations for everything. It's choose your own adventure, I guess.
Right. If you really cared about a plot, you would really hone this down so there wouldn't be so much doublespeak and confusion. But I kind of get the gist of what they're implying here, that there is a cult of witches that in raising children to be possessed by demons are hoping to expand their travel plans.
They're building an army for something. Who knows? We're not told.
Yeah, it feels big. I'll put it this way. This movie implies a much bigger mythology than that first movie ever did. And what are marked ones? Well, we see that Jesse wakes up after this ritual and is bleeding because something has bitten him on the arm.
And that's not in the regular cut?
Yeah, it's in the regular cut.
Yeah, he just wakes up bitten, though.
Yeah.
There's no mirror.
Oh, okay. I thought it was related to the ceremony. Okay.
Well, that's what I thought, too. But then that ceremony, we're going to find out it's just because he's 18. That's why he was bitten.
Well, again, that's the implication of a shorter cut, but I do think that if you watch it the morning after that ritual, and there was something in that bathroom stall that was trying to get out and chase them, you would think that they summoned a demon and it bit him.
That's what I assumed early on. Yes, you are correct.
But then this movie confused me. I thought I was watching Paranormal Activity. I guess I'm watching the sequel to Chronicle.
Yes.
Because in addition to the bite, Jesse's now a superhero.
He's a super skateboarder that's grinding the rails all the way down the stairs. It's amazing. Go hang out with Tony Hawk. Go hang out with those guys from Jackass. You're an amazing skater now.
He can fling gangsters into vending machines and across the yard.
And I'm just going to put it out there because I feel like, Arnie, you are on the record of saying you don't like Chronicle. I do. I like that movie. And so this was cool. Chronicle was like the found footage version of Akira. They really tried to build up the tension that's in that Japanese anime that I love so much. Do it with white people on a shoestring budget. Maybe that wasn't the best way to do Akira, but it may be the best live action we ever get of it. So I was a fan of that. And in all these scenes, seeing him exercise his powers, I thought it was cool.
I didn't expect this to become Chronicle 2, where it's like superhero stuff going on. But yeah, I figured moving forward with this plot, like all these new powers would mean something. And like you keep saying, Stuart Jackass, this feels like, yeah, we'll do some pranks with levitation and skateboarding and beating people up and then just move on to the next plot point. This never really comes back.
But the extra money is evident here. This is something they never could have afforded to do in the previous ones. And so I wonder, how far will they go? I feel like I'm almost in the early scenes of Brightburn here. You know, like, how far will they take this new superpower now that they have a bigger budget to start showing more demonic supernaturalism?
Here, the powers just give them confidence to go to a party uninvited.
Well, I mean, again, I like that. Again, like you would. I mean, this is not so uncommon. We all know this story, right? We're seduced by the powers of evil. The fly, you know, at first he felt It was a good thing that it had merged with him. And yeah, here I can just walk into a house party with a lot of scary people and take home a babe that just kiss her, a total stranger, and take her home to Anna's place.
That is weird. Let's go to my dead neighbors to fuck.
I don't know, though. I like Hector's pickup line. Will you kiss me on my cheek? My cheek's right above my testicles.
Ah, yes, Hector. I mean, you gotta have the Hector. Like, for every time that Jesse's leaning back and doing the cool thing, you gotta have the clown that's gonna try it and fall on his ass.
Yeah, he's drawing the dick on Jesse's face. And
one thing that I found interesting is that this actor is about 12 years older than the actor for Jesse. I don't know if you can tell that on screen.
Really? No, I could not.
Yeah, I feel like they look age appropriate, like that.
Yeah,
it plays to me that Hector is his friend from high school, but he wasn't there at the graduation. And so maybe he is. But yeah, this is like a 32-year-old in this part. And so, yes, now we're at Anna's place again. There's got to be a reason. The camera, help me out.
Why is the camera set there?
She says something about a sex tape, and I'm beginning to think maybe that is what this is supposed to be.
No, she looks at the camera and then starts getting into it. They're making a sex tape.
Yeah.
I thought, like, because, yeah, she's doing her makeup. I'm like, is she just using the reflection of the lens to do her makeup? But, yeah, I guess it is a sex tape, the kids these days.
And they leave it running while he goes off to get a condom. You need to pause that stuff. That's a boring sex tape.
Yeah, but this is where we get the thrum. This is what I've always called that sound effect of room tone that is just too loud to just be innocuous, you know, that roar. I think you said this is the thing that scares you most about the original, the thrum.
It was unnerving in the original, and here they've started doing more with spatial placement. There were a couple of times where stuff would happen out of rear speakers, and that always gets me. I'm always like, did something fall in my room whenever there's something in those rear speakers? So yeah, this had me looking around the room a couple of times at spatial sound.
And the camera just happens to be placed right in front of a hatch that Oscar is going to pop out of. And so we'll never see Penelope again, but Oscar is going to be waiting when Jesse comes back with his condom to tell him, well, what would be obvious to anyone that's ever seen a horror movie, what's happening to me is going to happen to you. I killed Anna because she put something inside me that's also inside of you. They have the same bite mark.
And then Oscar jumps off a roof, lands on a car again. A good effect. I mean, they're putting the money on the screen this time. You could never have smashed a car like that in Paranormal Activity 1, 2, or 3.
I was so impressed, I rewound it to watch it a second time. I'm like, yeah, they did a pretty good job there.
And a good jump scare. I mean, I definitely think that this movie, flat out, I'm just going to say it, is the most... Scary's not the right word.
Nope.
No.
But the most adrenalized, the one that is going to surprise and get me to jump the most.
I never jump. I admire isn't quite the right word, but I understand it's more professionalism. Now, like I said with the last one, the more polished it gets, the less scary I find it. I feel more like I'm watching a movie and I don't jump and I don't get spooked.
You're standing by that first one is the best one, huh?
Uh-huh.
Still going to be your tack on this. I don't know how you can't see that this is, a grand improvement over that first movie. What was so scary about sound effects and a bed? I don't get it. I'll never get it, I guess. Here, things are happening, and I do think they're staged in ways that are surprising. And yes, the budget helps, too. Even if they had a director with the same skill, he could never stage some of these things in the first movie. They had to go with minimalism because the whole thing was $15,000.
Yeah, I'm just saying the more we have of this stuff, the more I feel detached.
The better. The better the movie is because it's a real movie and not some amateurish thing.
Depends on what you're going for, you know? Some people like amateur porn over polished porn. Maybe I like amateur horror over polished horror.
We know that you don't. We know from every review of every horror movie ever that you are the guy that likes slick and proudly says so. So I do not know what happened to you in Paranormal Activity to make you say that the cheap thing about a bed is the best one.
Hey, what are these bite marks on my arm?
Yeah, something happened. Something that's possessed you because you are not the guy that I know that likes the remakes more than the originals.
Only of Halloween and Texas Chainsaw.
And Texas Chainsaw Massacre and everything else.
No, not Friday the 13th and not Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, fair enough. Nobody likes those.
But here, yeah, I'm appreciating the movie.
Yeah, again, I think it's working. I'm just going to call it out. I feel like while there are still all the irritants I have for all found footage movies, why are they holding the camera? Why do they continue to hold the camera in this moment? Obviously, the camera's set so perfectly to capture it in a certain way. Those kind of irritants are probably always going to be a part of any feature that tries to pretend that it's just amateur footage. But I do feel like they're doing it well.
Part one didn't have that problem. They put the camera wherever the fuck they wanted.
I agree with what you're saying, Stuart, but it helps so much that this just feels like an actual movie and not a prank, not a haunted corn maze that I go to at Halloween. Like, this feels like it's a real thing, at least.
All right, so let's talk about the hatch. What is going on down here? It's longer in the extended cut, but more or less we get the same idea, that down underneath Anna's apartment is an altar where she has been taking photos, or maybe she just only recently got those photos and put a hex on. I can't figure this out. Has she been following? Yeah, no, she'd have to be.
Well,
because there is a photo of her as a younger woman and Jesse's mom while she's still pregnant with Jesse and Lois, the Katie and Christy mom.
Yes. And I feel like what they're telling us in this one is that there's a Bruja running a Toby factory where, yeah, if you want to get riches. The thing is, though, we never see what happens with these pregnant women. They all seem to just, like, die. But, like, yeah, you want a new car, you make a deal with the devil, and you go see the Bruja, and she puts the hex on you when you're pregnant, and the demon possesses your baby, and supposedly, maybe you get what you wanted.
Right. Yeah, that's the part that, yes, people only work with the devil when they think they're going to get something out of it. And the fact that Anna spent her whole time in a tiny apartment with newspaper on the windows leads me to believe that she didn't get any of it. I mean, that even gets said by Hector, that why did she stay here if she could time travel and teleport to other dimensions?
Why was she doing this out of a little apartment in Oxnard? Like, yeah, set her up at the grandma's house from the other film. Like, we're going to go there. This seems like a weird spot to do all this.
But she's obviously following Jesse and Oscar at this point. And the thing is, if Jesse was the firstborn son, what did his mother, father, grandmother, somebody get in exchange for his soul?
Well, we do know that Jesse's mom got killed.
Yeah.
It was mentioned early at the graduation. She's not here, but she'd be proud of you. I definitely think that that's something that went down. There always seems to be a blood sacrifice connected to all these paranormal events. Somebody has to die. And yes, that mom was killed.
Well, do you see those tools that they were using to, like, deliver babies out of that house or something? That, yeah, I can't imagine surviving childbirth there.
Yeah, I'm just saying that in the earlier movie, in part two, it was said that an ancestor makes a deal for wealth or power, and then the firstborn son in the lineage is the price to pay. And judging by the apartment where they live, nobody in Jesse's direct bloodline got a lot of money or power.
Well, I think that maybe is the prank on Toby's part. Yeah, sell your soul to the devil and you just die giving birth and, like, now we get your baby.
Oh, no, I also think there's something coming here. Like, this is long in gestation. It's like the reward hasn't been brought yet. But when Jesse becomes demonic, we're one step closer to, I don't know, an apocalypse or whatever this midwife coven would want. Again, they're keeping it abstracted enough that we can't really know the fine details.
And isn't that frustrating? When I'm watching this, I'm thinking about what you said last week, Stuart, which was, what did we learn in the last movie that we don't know? And here, really, other than now there's an army of demon people, what are we learning? We're not learning any why. We're not learning any how.
We're learning a lot.
I think this is all about the how.
Yeah, I don't know how you could even say that. This is the one to tell us the most of all of them. If there's ever been one to try the hardest to piece all the things together, it's this one.
It feels like it's merely reiterating what we've already sussed out of the first four.
Don't you love Saw movies because you find out all these abstract connections between what happened in one room in part two and another room in part five?
You did praise that continuity, Arnie, in all those Saw films.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Well, here we're finding out where those missing videotapes went to, and we're seeing the little girls down in the basement at some point. I do believe, I don't know, there's a woman that's following Jesse. At some point, he hears his dog barking down there, and I think that's Katie. Here's my guess. Katie is the original possession. She's the OG demon, and she's always going to pop up when one of these new firstborns gets it on with possession.
No. They show us Katie because that's the one we're familiar with. But I mean, the grandma was involved. Like, I think it goes way back before Katie.
But what happens after these children get possessed then if it's been going on for so long? Do they just not live long?
Apparently, there is an army of demon children that are now 18 or older running around.
Right. But they're not children if it's been going on since the 30s, is my point. They're very old demon men.
And what are they doing? And where is Hunter?
I thought it was all about Hunter. Like, he would grow up to be Toby. Like, he's the Antichrist. But no, there is an army of Antichrist running around.
Oh, yeah. I definitely get the sense that he wasn't the only one. It's not the omen. It is not you're the special one. It is that there is an international cult. I mean, we'll even see that once they bribe Arturo to come in and look at what Oscar was doing after he dies, they're given privy to his bedroom. He has a whole collage on his closet door of all these children all over the world, all different languages, all firstborns. This is where we get that dialogue, marked by a witch's army. I mean, am I hearing complaint or not about that? I think I hear derision in Arnie that this is stupid.
Yeah, I've never liked the coven thing, and they're doubling down on it. I'm still appreciating that the movie's doing something, but I'm not really into this midwives bit.
And I liked all that stuff, so I'm enjoying this, even though, yeah, what is this army going to do? Are we ever going to see an army of Antichrist, like, storming the streets? No, because they'll never have the budget for that. It's a lot of promises that are going to go broken, but at least I'm enjoying the little bits that they're going to give me. That's the best I think I could do with these, so I'll take what I could get.
My one question was, did they actually tie in to the Japanese sequel? Because on Oscar's wall, there are some pages in what, you know, Chinese or Japanese or Korean.
Yeah, there's some international ones there.
But there was no child in that. They didn't really spring in children until the second movie. And by the second movie, I mean the second American film. So maybe, but I took this more to mean, like, we could keep doing this. We could keep coming up with different scenarios. We now have a roadmap to how to make sequels. If this one hits it off, we can go all over the world and see different scenarios of child abduction.
There do look to be some Amish people on there, maybe just really old matronly people, but I think that's where we're going with part 7.
And Allie Ray is on there as well. And I don't know that I totally recognize her from the blurry newsprint photo.
I did not.
When I heard Carlsbad and Baby Snatching, I was like, oh, I think they're going to tie that together.
Yeah, as soon as I saw that Carlsbad, I'm like, oh, okay, now they're going to try to tie this all together. Or are they just saying that, yeah, that baby was just another one amongst all these babies? But I did think it was interesting that they start dropping in those clues.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's told me everything. That, yes, Hunter and Jesse and Oscar and every other kid on this wall is a part of a coven's plan for something evil. That is the ultimate payoff for why all these people are living in poverty and doing what they're doing. That's more than I ever got in any other film. Let me just put it that way.
Again, it feels like a lot of retread to me. It doesn't feel like all new, but...
But it is a part 5. I mean, there's that as well. What can you really expect?
When you've given so little in the first 4, you could really build upon this.
I do agree with that. Like, there's so much room to explain things.
And to me, it feels like they finally turn on the faucet. I feel like this is the one where they're actually doing that. After the arid desert of part 4, where nothing, absolutely nothing was revealed, they are now connecting things.
Agreed there. I think that faucet finally bursts. Maybe in the last 5 minutes, you'll get all that. But yeah, it's going to be a while till you get all those connective pieces.
I mean, it happened in this moment. And this is the way found footage works. It doesn't put a bold spotlight on all of these things. It's just like, oh, did you notice in the background there's the videotapes? Or did you notice that that was alley. And that's how it should work. That's how it preys upon you, is that it just feels almost shrugged off. And then when you really think about it, think of Blair Witch. Why was that guy standing in the corner? And then you remember the whole legend. You want that to be the interplay. That's how found footage at its best has worked. I feel like they're telling us a lot while still doing the minimalism stuff that people that are fans of this franchise seem to love.
Well, did you love the minimalism of the Simon game?
I love the Simon game. I thought that was cool. I liked, yes, this ghost, demon, sorry, it's not a dead person, it's something from another world. This demon, yeah, I thought that was novel. Do kids even know what Simon is anymore?
I don't think they would, but I do like it as an electronic Ouija board where they can say yes and no with green and red. I wondered what would happen if yellow or blue lit up.
Indecisive.
Demon just fucking with you.
But I do feel like this is maybe a carryover of another kind. Like, this feels like something that should be in a Conjuring movie, maybe. Annabelle movie, even. Insidious. But yes, the idea of a James Wan little trick here, like, it's a good bit. I'm not sure that you use it to its best potential, but that can be said about
everything in this franchise.
Most of the best bits in any Paranormal Activity is that it works better in isolation than is seen as part of a tapestry.
I'll understand why they're filming that, though, because if a Simon machine started answering my questions, I'd film that shit, too.
Yeah, well, no, at a certain point, they're filming it because they're concerned about Jesse. Because while he was doing superhero feats at one point, now he's pulling out giant hairs out of his eye, and the lights flicker, and he's got a demon face. And yeah, you just might want to document that stuff just for your doctor or something, just to see, you know, like, is this normal? What should I do when a 30-foot-long hair comes out of my pupil?
Well, you call Allie, apparently.
She does not look the same as she did in part two to me. I don't know. It's been a while since part two and she's grown up, but I wouldn't have recognized her if the dialogue hadn't told me who she was.
Yeah, and obviously it's become her mission to understand what happened to her own family. She was the only one that survived. She came home to dead parents and her brother went missing. They have the footage of Katie taking him, but she knows nothing else. She has taken it upon herself to, I don't know, if she's got all the answers, she sure didn't do a great job of explaining it. She says something about insignia, like it looks like an evil eye, and she, yeah, the 666 thing. Was that what she was saying?
Yeah, she said 666 equals 18.
Oh my God, that's so pathetic.
It took me a while to realize she was just doing math. I'm like, how what?
Yeah, I never understand that until this moment. So, okay. So that was, oof, that's bad. Okay. Yeah. All right. Whatever. The point is, the real thing is, she's setting up the climax. She knows very well where all these rituals happen. No matter where they are in the world, the kids end up at this one place, which fortunately isn't too far away. It's in California. And so here's a map.
I mean, Moore Park, that's only like a 20-minute drive from Oxnard.
Yeah.
Now, I know that Allie's stepmom was Christy and not her actual mother.
Right.
But is it possible Allie might know that Christy was raised in this house where she's sending people?
Maybe, she's here only for a moment. You think she might want to join forces with them, but, you know, she's not that committed.
No, they're going to get a real gangster to help them.
Yeah, it's not her movie. They just thought that it would be fun. And I want to agree with them. They have tied in this movie 1, 2, 3. I don't think anything comes out of 4.
Nope.
But yes, they've tied the best Paranormal Activity movies in with this one. Again, I thought I was getting a spinoff, and now I'm feeling like, no, this is the one that's bringing it all to a head.
Yeah, that was the big surprise. They drop things early on about time travel and portals, and yeah, then they start bringing all the characters in. They really are going to merge all of these but 4, because no one should see 4, together.
Yeah, they want people to forget about that one, and it's easy to do. I've already forgotten about it.
Yeah, I don't remember what happened in it.
I have to keep thinking, wait, which one was 4?
Mm-hmm. The knife in the ceiling, or wherever. That's the best I can do for you.
The Xbox.
Oh, that's the right. That's where he puts spyware on all the computers, and that's their gimmick.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, Arnie's favorite character, this is where she gets her big moment. Jesse has been acting weird enough, making the Chihuahua writhe on the ceiling and what have you.
That poor dog. Do they kill the dog in this one? I kind of felt like the dog was dead.
No, they killed the grandma, but not the dog.
No, I think she's alive too. Well, they don't say for sure.
You do?
Yeah, she ends up in the ICU, which means she's not dead.
Oh, okay, I didn't catch that.
They were trying to go to the hospital when all of this goes sideways. But here, she's been in the background. If you see the longer cuts of the movie, she's
wiping the house down with vinegar.
Yeah, spritzing things. And you might forget that Jesse has a dad, but there are even deleted scenes where the conflict is Caesar, Jesse's dad, doesn't want her doing these things. And so he's actively trying to stop her from using protective magic.
It does feel like the dad knows that his wife was up to something when she was pregnant with Jesse and, like, just does not want to discuss it. Like, he knows something went bad.
Yeah, either that or he just had no idea he dated a witch, you know, like, one or the other. He either condoned it silently or, like, just one of those oblivious guys that just has no idea what his woman's doing. But, yes, Caesar kind of drops out. I feel like he doesn't make the impact, but Irma, she gets this moment where she goes to the Santa Ria shop and gets a carton of eggs. And
I think that Santa Ria shop is the location from the end scene from part four. That looked like the shop that I saw in that cut scene. That was, if you saw the movie in theaters, the end stinger.
Oh, yes. You mentioned that there was something that I did not see that would indicate to audiences that they were headed to a Latin spiritualism subplot. And so, okay. So there is a tie to four here. And apparently, it's not even in the longer cut, but it is a deleted scene on the DVD. The blonde woman that is going to be at the end of this movie a couple times, curious to know if you guys had any impression about who she was.
Yeah, random midwife is what I thought.
Maybe. But she's wandering around this shop and seems to be following Jesse. Jesse is here at the Santa Ria shop as well. So I think they're setting up a major character for the next movie. And we just don't have a name yet.
But when the grandmother is trying to get the spirit out of Jesse, comes a moment where all of a sudden I'm like, no, you went too far. I really like the buildup. I like the bloody egg. I like when it goes into the night vision and nobody can see anything and it's feeling a little bit like that scene from Don't Breathe, not quite that good, but I'm really appreciating everybody in the dark not knowing what's going on. And then Jesse appears floating and the whole thing becomes a cheesy Premiere Pro transition effect and he telekinetically flings stuff around. That scene looked bad.
I liked it. I actually thought that it, again, low rent Akira is what I'm thinking about with Chronicle and this one. I'm like, oh yeah, this is kind of fun.
I appreciated the scene because that's when it let me know that the movie producers of this film knew, hey, we got to do something. Like, we cannot just knock on doors and slightly shift a chandelier or something. Like, yeah, we got to go for something much bigger. And with their budget much bigger is like a guy warping into the room.
Yeah, but CGI isn't scary in the least. If they're trying to go for scare,
neither is a bed. Neither is a door closing slowly. Neither is a silhouette against a window. Like, these things,
atmosphere is scarier than CGI.
Says the man that didn't recommend The Haunting. Like, you hate that kind of shit. I don't know why you recommended that first movie. I really don't. But I'm glad that they recognize things need to happen in this movie. It is better to be cheesy than to be dull.
Yeah, I appreciate that just random crap is starting to happen because you brought up Blair Witch. Like, why are they standing in the corner at the end? Like, we heard some kind of mythology be about that. That might really bug me, but I'm so into that film, like the rawness, and I'm just, there's scary stuff going on. It's just so crazy by the end of it. Like, I just go with it. And that's kind of how I feel at this point. Like, you just want to have warping power? Sure, it's different. I'll go with it because at least maybe this movie will do something.
It's obviously building to something bigger than someone just being thrown against a camera lens, which has been the climax for too many of them at this point.
And yet I think that's how this ends.
Well, I mean, no, we'll talk about it, but
I know
we're almost there. But first, just to put a fine point on it, Irma does try to pour a healing bath and we have a moment where Jesse appears at the very least to be enjoying that she fell down the stairs and probably did push her, but she's not dead.
Yeah, I thought she was dead as well. I didn't catch the ICU bit.
It looked like there was blood pooled around her.
Oh, no, I'm sure it really hurt. Hence why she's in the hospital. But when we cut back, when they're filming again, the sister, you might forget, Jesse had a sister. She's on the way to the hospital. Hector is feeling like he wants to do that, too. And Marisol, who was sort of the pretty neighbor that I think that Jesse was kind of crushing on this whole time, Marisol is the one that's like, hey, but Allie gave us this map. And wouldn't we do better to try and find Jesse at the place where we think the ritual is going to happen?
Did they say that they were going to Moor Park? That
no.
Okay, because I did not get that this was the grandmother's house from part 3. I recognize that unicorn painting, but I'm like, oh, maybe that's just a thing. They all have that unicorn painting up at wherever the midwives are.
Yeah, to me, that was a total... Both times we returned to previous locations were total surprises that I liked the way it took me a beat to go, wait a minute, I know this place. I mean, I think that's effective.
Yeah, it wasn't until I saw that painting where it finally clicked.
And they take a couple people with them. They take Oscar's older brother and his gangbanger friend.
Yep, they arm up. I love it. Like, let's go shoot some brujas.
It should also be said they did have a meeting with Jesse in an alley where they get the upper hand. They take a bat to him and it looks like they're getting away. And again, another good jump scare. They get crashed by some truck runs into them and then takes Jesse away. That's what sort of motivates them to, yeah, go get Arturo at this point. They can't go to the hospital and check on Irma. They really do have to go get Jesse because he was just snatched.
Abducted.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought this ending, best of the series, most exciting of the series.
When Arturo starts blasting witches and like they are being pulled on wires backwards. Yep, loving it. Wish this went on longer.
I do too. That's a lot of fun.
I cheered every time he shot a witch.
And kind of scary. I mean, like, my adrenaline is up when we have Hector running around. Again, why is he holding the camera? Why wouldn't he put it down?
No idea. Yeah.
I think Oscar's older brother would not want his homicide on tape.
Yeah, probably not. Not a good idea to tape any of this. But really an effective, over-the-top, similar to the conclusions we've gotten before, but much grander and much better for it. I'm going to make the opposite argument of Arnie. The more they can be more like a real movie, the better this franchise gets. The more that it just wants to be about watching a counter and blurry video footage, not scary.
Yeah, not that I'm showing my hand yet, because I don't know if I'm not going to reveal if I'm going to recommend this or not, but I'm going to say 3 is still my favorite, but this one comes in right under that. Like, 3 got it enough in there, but this one, yeah, because it's not so much like the other Paranormal Activities, because it does feel more like a real movie, like, I'm just getting into it more now. Like, yeah, give me this.
I'm able to enjoy it more like a movie as compared to an experiment or a YouTube video, which the first one was. This, I'm able to rate it and judge it like a movie.
Right, because you can't keep doing what the first one did. That was the death knell we heard in part 4. You got to at least give them that. They've definitely upped it a lot. There's a lot more going on, a lot more in play than there ever was in probably any of these movies. And yeah, this is where we actually return to the first Paranormal Activity. Hector, in all of the chasing and confusion, he sees Jesse appear from underneath one of the covered bits of furniture, is chasing him around. I don't know. Something came off of a mirror. I know it was like a sheet flew at him. Did he run into the mirror?
I thought that was a door, like a weird door in the wall. That was a mirror?
I don't know. I thought he was in a garage, but I think that might be Mika's garage. He time travels.
Yes.
Not only does he go to San Diego, far away from where he's at, but he is what? I don't know. What is the time period at this point? I would have to say it's at least, well, I don't know if the fourth movie even counts, but it's at least around the same time as that. We're 5 years in the past now, going back to 2006.
I thought they said this was 2012 in this one. Class of 2012.
Oh, you're right. There's the time marker. You're right. 2012 at the beginning of summer. Now we're probably at the end of summer. So yes, it has been 6 years since Katie killed Mika, I guess.
In that first one, I didn't go back to watch it. I don't want to. Does she scream Mika's name? Because the way it plays to me in this...
Yes.
Okay. Because at first I thought, oh, she sees Hector and she's going to scream for Mika. This is before she's even been possessed. Maybe this is what started tipping them off that weird things were going on. But no, this is the end of that first film.
What's funny is Mika's wall of videos. When I saw that, I'm like...
Yes, I wanted to pause and try to... But I couldn't read any of the titles. All his Blu-rays up there.
I was just like... Whose house had that? I know I've been in this house before. Whose house had the movies? And then I see Katie, I'm like, Mika had the movies.
Yeah. So again, this is kind of a Saw move, right? Like, we're finding ways to connect to the old stuff and things are happening concurrently.
And you get to see more horror here than you ever saw in the first one. You get to see the stabbing. And because in the first one, you didn't know she was laying a trap when she was yelling for help. You thought... She was being attacked by a demon when she was yelling for help. Here, you get to see her set the trap. You get to see her get the knife, kill Mika. Her killing of Mika with a knife is much more believable than any neck that Katie has ever snapped.
But the thing is that you're saying, oh, look, it's all getting connected. Yeah, I don't know why it's connected this way, though. I don't know what it means that there's a portal in Katie and Mika's house that the midwives are using. Like, there's still things to be fleshed out here. Like, yes, they've combined movies together and brought in other characters. And I appreciate that, like, this is just going so crazy at the end and just neat things that we haven't seen happen are happening. But try to tell me what it means. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to overstate what's happening here. Where I'm not seeing brilliance unveiled before my eyes.
No.
I'm saying how nice that they're actually trying to say that things that happened in the past mattered and are connected.
But then somehow Jesse also came to the past to kill Hector.
Well, sure. Why not?
Well, yeah, he's a demon at this point.
And this blonde woman who, again, popped out. She was in the horse stables. She was in the deleted scene at the Santa Ria shop. And now she is the one that's going to turn off the camera after Fang-faced Jesse takes out Hector. Who is she? I'm just going to make a prediction. She must be the star of the next movie. The next movie is supposed to be the conclusion. So this is the mystery that they're teasing, much like the fourth movie teased the direction that they were going to. I assume the screenwriter knows that he's bringing it to a close with whoever this woman is that now has the camera.
Yeah, but Landon doesn't return as writer or director for the next one.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
He must have been doing Happy Death Day. Ooh. Well, I wonder what that means. I think I know what that means, but...
Well, let's find out what this means. Jacob, Stewart, do you recommend Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones? Jacob.
This one's kind of tough for me because it does feel more like a real movie, not such a gimmick this time. So do I judge it as a real movie or do I judge it as a Paranormal Activity film? Because those are two very different things in my head. Like, if this was just some movie, hey, we're reviewing The Marked Ones tonight, I'd be like, it's not that scary. It's got its moments. But for a Paranormal Activity film, it's pretty impressive. And that is where the dilemma is. I guess I could go the participation trophy route again. If I did it with three, this one, I could appreciate it within this franchise, at least, that it recognizes that it needs to do something different. I feel I've been yelling at a lot of people for giving this franchise hundreds of millions of dollars. And finally, the producers feel I'm right. Like, yeah, we need to do something else because, well, they're making less money. They got to make more money somehow. But yeah, they go for something different here. I think... within the framework of this franchise, they're successful in that. I like how crazy it goes at the end. Again, the midwives, which I just thought was a cult in part three. Like, that was some of my favorite stuff. You don't get a whole lot of it. Here you get more of the midwives. I like that they're going with that mythology. And yeah, that you get to see Brujas blown away at the end with a shotgun is kind of fun. The portal warping stuff. It's not great, but again, it's different. They're trying to expand the mythology here. They're trying to do something. So... not as good as part three. Like, three is still the high point for me, but this one was good enough that for Paranormal Activity films, I'll give this a recommend.
Stuart.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that I'm holding up the Simon. Is this innovative, terrific? Is The Marked One a great horror movie?
Yellow?
As a red. Yeah, no, it's not. But is it an entertaining rehash of a series that doesn't mean that much to me? beep, green light. Yeah, this is the best of the Paranormal Activity series, in part because there's actual activity. Things are happening. We're not just filming beds. We're not just listening to room tone. We're not just watching literal clock watching of counters going by. Things are actually happening. Things are being tied. And there's skill in the directing of it. Many times did I get surprised by the jump scares, which, again, are the lowest form of scare there is. But I don't know. If you do it well, a jump is a jump. And they got me more than once, particularly at the ending. They also are trying to jump the narrative. Again, I've already mentioned that they're throwing out buzzwords. We're hearing firstborn armies, midwives. They're connecting all four previous movies. They're giving this thing a weight. They're cloaking it in what they've done in the past and seemingly building up to some kind of conclusion next time. It's not a mind-blowing creative story. It is essentially jackasses and catfishers pranking us with GoPros. But I do feel like it's probably wise that they don't tell us too much, because I suspect that ultimately the answers aren't very good.
Yeah, they don't know the answers.
Keep the whole witch conspiracy a little bit underexposed. Keep it in that darkness that the video can't quite see. Don't let it tip into Stupidville. Keep it at 10 Cloverfield Lane. Don't go to Cloverfield Paradox and spoil it all by telling us too much. But I appreciate that they found the balance between doing nothing and building towards something. I think that, again, I sound like I'm raving like I loved it. Nothing about the Paranormal Activity series is anything that I love. But for a solid found footage movie, this is good. And yeah, the best, certainly, of the five movies I've seen.
This is the first Paranormal Activity film to get three recommends.
Oh, wow.
I never would have thought that would have happened.
Me either. But this one, to me, it is, as you guys have said, a real movie. And in that way, it robs Paranormal Activity of any ability to be frightening. So what I love about the first one, the fact that it got under my skin, is not here. But what I have instead are characters that I actually enjoy watching on screen. I kind of like weaving in and out of their lives, like going to the party and seeing the woman and then having that all be interrupted by Oscar and the pulling the big hair out of the eyeball. Some of it, I think, goes too far. I think him floating in the air and flinging stuff was too fakery. It just really pulled me out of any kind of horror feel. But I did like the tying together. I liked this as, yeah, the Avengers of the Paranormal Activity universe. You mentioned, Jacob, that I love the twisty-turny timelines of Saw, and yeah, that appealed to my geeky timeline self here. So yeah, I had a good enough time that I can give this a weak recommend. I'm hopeful that they'll carry this into part six. It is the conclusion of this original saga. I'm a little worried because it's called The Ghost Dimension, which only makes me think Poltergeist 2, The Other Side. And when we went to The Other Side, it wasn't so good.
Yeah, we better see what's inside that dark portal.
Yeah, obviously, what do we think is going to happen? None of us have seen it as of this recording. We don't know what's going to happen. I think what they've told us is Aunt Lois's place is the place you want to go to if you want to jump around in time. And I do know what the only thing I know about part six is they released it in 3D. And so I'm imagining we're going to go to some trippy places. I'm imagining this is going to be the most expensive. And that blonde chick,
who has a camera to film in 3D like home?
That blonde chick has the camera. I'm telling you, whoever that blonde chick is,
she gave it ghost powers and it could do 3D now.
She's going to be looking around. I think you got to take it back to Katie and Christy, how they got possessed, how they came to the demon again. And plus, you want to get those little girls again before they grow up. I think you got to show Toby.
But you got to tell us what happened to Hunter, at least.
Maybe. Yeah, again, I assume Hunter is one of hundreds. He's not that important. He was only important in that he was tied to Katie's lineage, but we've moved beyond them now. But Toby's the one, right? Like, we've got to see Toby, and if it's 3D, I want to see him looking good.
That's what I'm saying. When we go in that ghost dimension, we better see another world, and we better see some demons in it.
I'm breaking out the 3D Blu-ray, and I'm looking forward to jumping into that ghost world. I don't expect 3D to scare me, but maybe it can excite me.
It is a little disappointing that I didn't realize until this moment you're telling me that Christopher Landon is not coming back to whatever ideas he had in shaping this screenplay. Maybe he gave good notes to the person that's going to do it, but the guy that has been writing this since part two is not going to finish it. So, okay. Well, hope for the best. I don't believe the reputation is that it is one of the best, but I don't know. I've been surprised many times by this series. It sometimes unpleasantly, sometimes I've underestimated its appeal. And so hopefully that'll be true next week.
Well, we will find out next week. So thank you for your support of Now Playing. We hope you'll join us again next week to go to the Ghost Dimension with us. But for now, it's time for us to get back to the present.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
You know, I've heard of spirit photography before, but I've never actually seen it in person.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
We're so grateful that you're here. Thank you so much.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
This isn't Casper, the fucking friendly ghost you're chasing, man.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders.
I think that probably was illegal in Kentucky, yeah, that 12 feet.
They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
A final ritual, and that's where he's going to be.
Is she sure? Then we should call the cops.
Call the cops and tell them what?
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Fuck this shit, I'm done.
But for now, it's time for us to get back to the present.
God, that's your line.
That line makes sense again.
That paid off, because there's time travel now.
It came back around, it made no sense, and then it came back, now it makes sense.
Time travel, yeah.